WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
When Swiss Air Flight 111 went down Wednesday night, we lost many people who had dedicated their lives to helping others through medical research and humanitarian efforts. One of those people was Dr. Jonathan Mann, who was described by a colleague as the architect of the global mobilization against AIDS. He was the founding director of the World Health Organization's Global Program on AIDS and was a pioneer in linking world health with human rights. He founded the Center for Health and Human Rights at Harvard. He left Harvard last year to become the dean of the Allegheny School of Public Health in Philadelphia. That move made it easier to be with his wife, Mary Lou Clements Mann, who taught at Johns Hopkins University in Baltimore, where she was conducting research into an AIDS vaccine. She also died in the crash. The Manns were on their way to Geneva for a UN conference on AIDS vaccines. Dr. Jonathan Mann was generous to Fresh Air in giving his time to discuss AIDS. When we spoke on World AIDS Day in 1997, he had just returned from an AIDS conference in Geneva. He was focused on how to fight AIDS in poor developing countries which don't have the funding for the latest medical advances that are cause for optimism in the U.S.
I think this is a terribly difficult problem for us all, because when we first confronted AIDS in the early and mid-1980s, we really were all in this same boat together. North, south, east, and west. We didn't have any drugs. We didn't have any treatment. We didn't have a vaccine, obviously. What we had was common sense. What we had was good public health. What we had was exchange of information, of ideas about how to prevent infection. And then in the midst of this equality, this solidarity in front of the disease, drugs became available that become available only to the rich. And then the poor see the rich getting the drugs and living, while they who are infected do not get the drugs and die. It is literally as stark as that. Now, what this does is bring forward once again the fundamental inequity that has existed always and continues to exist in many other areas. It exists in areas where preventable and treatable diseases go unprevented and untreated in the developing world simply for that fact of not having the money to buy the drug or pay for the drug. The fact, however, that in AIDS this has emerged in front of our very eyes, that it isn't an inherited inequity, it's an inequity that we've actually seen develop right in front of us, it's so difficult to be for industrialized country people to be excited as they deserve to be about the new drugs, and then to see the faces of those who will never get those drugs, who will not have those drugs, and who will die as a result. My hope here is that tension, that ethical dilemma, will push people not to deny it or look away from the problem, but to say to themselves, what can we do for the developing world? And I sincerely believe and feel that the answer to that lies in vaccine, lies in the need to emphasize, to put the energy and the resources, not into basic research on vaccine, but now into moving vaccines into the development phase so that they can become a reality. This, I think, will be the expression of global solidarity from an industrialized world that has drugs that treat to a world which needs desperately to prevent the over 95% of infections that are occurring in the developing world.
There's an interesting article in November in the New York Times basically asking the question, is it time to challenge the idea that AIDS is a special illness, that people with AIDS are entitled to kind of special benefits, whether it's free hot lunches, free haircuts, art classes, legal mm-hmm. advice, dinners delivered. And these are all the special services that arose through a kind of informal AIDS network of people who were concerned about friends and loved ones and neighbors. So have you been following this debate?
Yeah, I have. And actually, I think many of us for quite a long time have felt that AIDS is not special, but that we shouldn't respond to that idea by lowering standards of AIDS care back to the way it is for others, but rather use AIDS as an example of how what people need can actually be provided and how important that can be. I remember back in the late 1980s visiting San Francisco General Hospital, visiting the AIDS ward there, And being very impressed by all the amenities, the comfortable chairs, the plants, the VCR, the television, and so forth. And then going to the cancer ward fairly nearby, and the cancer ward was sort of a regular cancer ward, like you'd imagine. I think the response to that, again, is not to make the AIDS ward like the cancer ward, but make the cancer ward like the AIDS ward. And so I think that we really have learned a lot about the importance, for example, of dignity in the context of this epidemic. We've learned how critical it is that people who have a disease, no matter what disease or condition, be accorded dignity. And people with AIDS have fought for and demanded that dignity. Well, that same issue of dignity applies as much to people with cancer or heart disease or other conditions. So I think that it's a very healthy debate, and I think that the period of time when we saw AIDS as a completely unique phenomenon really ended some time ago. We now recognize that in this country, for example, if we really want to deal seriously with AIDS, we're not only going to have to deal seriously with issues of health care for all Americans, but we're going to have to deal with the factors in our society that make people vulnerable to HIV in the first place. And that includes racism as just one piece of that picture. Similarly, around the world, we're seeing that the underlying root causes of vulnerability to AIDS are the same conditions which create vulnerability to the other major causes of premature disability, illness, and death in the world. So I think we're at the verge of a reintegration, in a sense, of work against AIDS with broader work to improve health in this country and abroad.
What else are you thinking about on this World AIDS Day?
Well, I am first of all thinking of the first World AIDS Day in 1988, and how on that day, how exciting it was that in every single country in the world, there was activity among non-governmental organizations, among private people, around the issue of AIDS. The slogan for the first World AIDS Day was, "Tell the world what you're doing about AIDS." And I'll always remember the feeling in WHO headquarters as, in a sense, the countries around the world lit up one after another as we received reports of activities that people were using that day, that World AIDS Day, to really say something about the importance of AIDS and what they were doing and what needed to be done. Since then, World AIDS Day has remained a day that belongs to people, not to governments. It's not an official day that vanishes, you know, in the long list of official days. And even though there are official declarations and proclamations, the real heart of World AIDS Day has always been what people do on that day to think about AIDS, to remember those who have died, to think about how important it is to protect the living.
Dr. Jonathan Mann died with his wife, Mary Lou Clements Mann, in the Swiss air crash. They were both 51. Our interview was recorded last year on World AIDS Day.